This show is sponsored by Midi Health. There are great things that come with age: wisdom, experience, and knowledge, just to name a few. But if you're a woman over 40, it can also bring some less desirable things like hot flashes, insomnia, brain fog, moodiness, and weight gain, all symptoms of menopause and perimenopause. Yes, hormonal transition is a fact of life, but that doesn't mean you have to accept its symptoms as just another part of aging. Midi clinicians are menopause experts, equipped to support you with safe, effective, FDA-approved medications, as well as supplements, lifestyle coaching, and preventative health guidance. You'll come out of the experience feeling heard and with a plan to start feeling better. Midi offers accessible care. All their services are covered by insurance, and they're conveniently accessible through telehealth visits and 24/7 messaging. You deserve to feel great. Book your virtual visit today at joinmidi.com. That's joinmidi.com.
It is Friday, June the 14th, into our 6 o'clock hour sure of is. Sports talk, getting into our Saints soundbank, definitely this segment. I guess we'll call it the 6 o'clock Saints segment. But before we get into the black and gold, want to give a little NBA Finals news. We do have some word on Kristaps Porzingis. He will be available to play game 4 this evening. Head coach of the Celtics saying, though, he's not quite there yet, but will only be used in very specific situations. And we kind of talked about it. Joking on
so like
air.
The opening tip.
There you go. And if they happen to, I guess Dallas makes this game close and they need him, then bring him in for a matchup against Kyrie.
But that doesn't make sense. It doesn't make sense because like you wouldn't. He's not going to play.
You don't think it would seem a little bit?
I'm sure
he wants to play too.
Yeah, I think it's like that's just their concession. It's like we'll have you in a jersey, and then
to appease him.
Yeah, like he wants to get on the floor so he can say he played.
If
you're not gonna, you wouldn't just put him in there for like I don't know what situation is it that you don't have to play basketball? Because if what's situationally right?
Yeah,
like you're gonna be in a situation where you can get hurt.
Well, I guess they're in a situation where they're trailing.
Yeah, but I don't see it.
I want to get into our Oakland Heart Jewelers talk and text line before we hit the Saints soundbank. Jimmy and Gretna wanted to sound off about Alvin Kamara. What you got today, Jimmy?
What's up, man?
And look, you guys are young. I tried to relay this message to Bobby Hebert, but look, I'm still on the search for these Matt Rife tickets. All right, I know, Matt Rife's in New Orleans tomorrow. He's the cool new comedian and all that stuff. So look, I'm making a call. If anybody's got extra tickets, call up WWL, and you guys let me know. We're all going to – look, if you guys get Steve, if y'all get tickets, let me know. We'll all meet there, go get some beers tomorrow night at the Sanger Theater because
well,
really want to go. Tickets.
You know those secondary market prices for Rife are way high.
Let's just say they're more expensive than a Pelicans upper deck ticket on a Wednesday night. I'll
so
put it to you like that. Okay. Yeah, more than $6.
At two zeros, maybe.
Yeah, and look, I want to reiterate, I called into the show late last night, and Steve, you agreed 100%, and I was trying to go somewhere with the second point. First off, for the listeners, going back to when Jameis Winston did what he did, giving Jamal the touchdown, everyone's like, and I get it, there's both sides to this coin here, there's two sides, it's the Falcons, it's our rival, the guy didn't have a touchdown, it was a moral victory for him. And he made that decision. What was weird to me was how he did that regardless of what Dennis Allen wanted. And Dennis Allen had to eat crow and all that stuff. And it was like kind of a mess. What it told me as a fan is there's a lack of respect between the player and the coach. Now, this was my point, Steve. I tried to say this to Bobby last night. Correct me if I'm wrong. Bobby said, well, that's up to Mickey Loomis as far as AK's contract. What I was getting at was I feel the same way about AK walking off the field during practice. From what I understand, Dennis Allen had no idea about it. I just personally feel, and I get it. I understand what Bobby Arrow was saying. That has nothing to do with Dennis Allen, the contract deal. And AK is just doing what his agent tells him because he's trying to make as much money as possible before his expiration date hits as an NFL player. But I still believe that there's a lack of respect in regard not only to the Jameis situation, but this situation where you just walk off the field and the coach has no idea about it. Now, regardless of the Loomis contract and the agents talking and all that kind of stuff, That's what I was getting at, Steve. I want to get y'all's take on that.
For me, Jimmy, I do agree with the Jameis Winston deal, and that's why he's not here anymore. You can't line up for a victory, kneel down formation, and then start running a play. I didn't agree with that at all. I thought it was cheap, and yeah, that's why that Jameis Winston has moved on to greener, greater pastures in Cleveland. Good luck to you there. With Alvin Kamara, he did show up at the facility, did partake in the team's walkthrough practice, wasn't on the field for the mini camp session outside where we saw anything, all of a sudden him walking off, you know, during a practice. It was after the walkthrough that he left. I don't look at that as a similar situation where it's disrespect to Dennis Allen. To me, it was a very calculated message that Alvin Kamara was sending to everybody that about his value and what he wants going forward in a more, I guess you'd say, stable, more lucrative situation with this team right now.
Yeah, I don't know. I feel like there's two questions here. One, it's like, okay, was it disrespectful? Yeah, of course it is. That's the point, right? Like, now I don't think that this you could draw a line
between.
It's
not pointed at DA.
What Jameis did or and what Alvin did. Like, those are two very different things. They're very completely different situations. Now you look at it and you say, okay, was it disrespectful? Of course.
Right.
Yes. That's the point. You walked off, you left, didn't say anything to your coaching staff. Yes, of course it is. But again, you're trying to send a message. Like, this isn't just random. Like, this is strategic. So, sure, it would be disrespectful regardless of who the coach was. But we've had holdouts before. Any holdout at its core is disrespectful to to the team, because you are saying, no, I'm not going to show up. Everyone else is there. I'm not going to show up. But I don't agree with the idea that it's only that it's targeting the head coach, right? Like, that's, to me, that's like, I don't see, if you're saying, like, if Sean Payton was here, he wouldn't have done that. Meh, I don't know. I kind of feel like it would have been even more thumbing your nose because he is the offensive coach and you're doing that. So I mean, we've had holdouts before, right? Like, Mike Thomas held out in 2019. Alvin, you know, I think it kind of got swept under the rug in 2020 because it was 2020 and there was some other things going on around that time. But he kind of held out at that time too. There was some awkwardness at that time for his contract. So I don't know. I don't buy that we're talking about, oh, he's only doing this because Dennis Allen doesn't have control of that team. Because that's basically what you're saying. Like, that's what it boils down to, is if there was a different coach who was a stronger figure in that locker room, that this wouldn't have happened. I don't think that's the case. I think it does go back, and you're seeing a guy making a statement to the front office. And yeah, it would have been nice if he had mentioned, hey, DA, I'm leaving. But then that would have kind of put DA in that position where he had to answer for it. So I don't know. I think it's going to be on Mickey. It's going to be on the front office, and we'll see how it develops. But I don't think that it's the head coach's strength in the locker room is the reason this is happening. I don't think that's it.
I wonder if Allen, like, obviously the walkthrough happens, you see Alvin, and then the team's taking the field outside for the mini camp practice workout session, and he's like, wait a minute, where'd AK go?
Yeah.
You know, just like we were doing, going down our roster.
I think that's exactly what happened. And I think that was the goal. That was the idea, is to, you know, people are going to notice this, and then it's going to become a conversation.
No, obviously it became huge news and national news, obviously, because it is a player of Alvin's magnitude as well. It'll be interesting to see what exactly he's seeking. I'm sure it's a little bit length on his deal that's currently, I know it runs through the 2025 season, but for all intents and purposes, you could say it's really just this year, and you don't really count next year. You don't expect the Saints to be on the hook for that dollar amount.
Well, they didn't restructure his contract, so you look at it and you say, okay, they're on the hook for, if they move on from him this year, they're on the hook for $18 million. You could spread out over 2 years, so it'd be $8 million this year, $10 million next year. If you move on from him next year, prior to June 1st, you're looking at $10 million. If you move on from after June 1st, you can split that as 4 and 6, right? So that's what you're looking at, is a $10 million dead cap hit next year. If you move on from him, that would save you still, like, his cap hit's going to be like $25 million if you keep him. So yes, you are looking at a contract that is built to kind of move on from it after this year. And now you can do that in a number of ways. You can extend him. You can cut bait. You can do whatever. I think if you're Alvin, if you want this to get done this year, you would be satisfied with you're extending that commitment out over an extra year, and you're basically guaranteeing the money that's currently on that deal, right? And I think if that's all Alvin is seeking, that it gets done. if Alvin is going out there looking for a Christian McCaffrey type extension, even somewhere even close to that, which was 2 years, $38 million, no. Now, if you're trying to add some value there, guaranteeing a good chunk of that money and maybe adding some incentives to the back end, then yeah, I think you probably do. But I think that's where you're going to find a you're going to find some challenges in. You're not going to pay someone based on what he thinks he can do. You're going to pay someone based on what you've seen. And what you've seen has been a guy whose production has waned, has gotten worse.
Dipped it over the last 2 years, right.
And you can tell me, okay, well, that's because of the Pete Carmichael offense. That's because of this. That's because of that. But, okay, fine. We'll play it out. If you deliver, then we will give you that extension, but we're not going to give it to you in this idea that, like, oh, that was a mirage. The real me is hidden in this new offense somewhere. The issue there is that I don't see a replacement anywhere in this roster, on this roster for Alvin in terms of what you need him to do for this offense to work. So, you know, it's you know, you're kind of getting into that CJ Gardner-Johnson territory of like, you'd really love him to play that contract out, but what if he won't? What if it becomes a distraction? And that's where we get a text saying, oh, would you trade Alvin Kamara? And I don't think you want to. But you have to be prepared to if that is your only option. So that's kind of where you are right now, and that's why it becomes awkward. And you have time. You know, it's not a you're not in a situation where you have to make a decision by tomorrow. But I can assure you that the Saints front office is not sitting there like, oh, we don't have to do anything. We're just going to twiddle our thumbs and wait until Alvin comes to his senses. No, this is going to be something they have to figure out.
This is definitely about money to me. I don't think Alvin wants.
No, it's about money. It's of course
no,
it's
no.
About
but
money.
I don't think it's a situation where he's like, I want out of New Orleans, and that's why he's trying to push this even more.
No, he's not requesting a trade. He's not demanding a trade. Right. Yeah, I mean, he's been his whole career. I think he wants to be here. I think he likes it here. He's got comfort here. But it's a question of, you know, you're talking about a 29-year-old running back, and what is the sensible thing to do?
That's a big one, right.
Right? Like, what is sensible? Even the extension for Christian McCaffrey was 2 years. It wasn't like it was 3, 4, 5 years. His, Alvin's last contract was a 5-year deal. You don't get that at 28. You get that at 24. So I don't know. It's an awkward situation. We're going to have to see how it develops. If he holds out of camp, then that's going to be the signal that it's really hitting in the fan. If he does not show up for training camp, because not only is that an issue, it also creates a scenario where you're getting fined. I'm interested to see if he gets fined for his departure. There is specific language in the CBA that like relates to a unexcused departure, not just not showing up,
right.
Leaving, which is what he did. So there is... There probably is ground for if they want to fine him that $17,000, it's just shy of $17,000. They can do that, and I don't think that would necessarily grease the skids on any amicability. In
but
this
isn't
situation.
That from the league, not the Saints?
I think they would have to enforce it. I think the Saints would have to enforce it. I don't think the league would act on its own. But I don't know. We haven't been in a scenario where we've had to see that
a player
play out,
walk out. Right.
So I'm not sure. And I think it would be on the Saints to be like, yeah, he left on his own and we did not excuse him, right? Because that's the difference. If it's an excused absence, then there's no fine. There's no risk of a fine. But at the end of the day, I think it would be on the Saints to be like, this was either excused or unexcused.
The thing is, and we've kind of talked about it, about, you know, Alvin showing up for the mandatory minicamp after not being there for the voluntary workouts, which he has not been, so it wasn't that huge of a surprise for that, but we obviously had to harp on it because he wasn't there. Also, Marshon Lattimore wasn't there. Both showed up for the start of minicamp. But with Alvin right now, when you see him on the field, man, he is clearly...
He's so good.
Clearly the best weapon that they have out there, even far and away above a guy like Taysom Hill.
He's so good. I mean, that's the frustrating thing. It's like, I, as a fan...
Yes.
Like, yeah, keep him around forever. I don't want Alvin to ever play anywhere else. He's so much fun to watch. We watched the other running backs out there for OTAs, and then Alvin got out there and like, oh, that's a star. Like, that's what you need. You don't get very far in the NFL without star players, and he is a star player. The question is, how long is he going to be a star player, and how is that commitment going to work for you? But there's no question that he is the best player on this offense.
Right, the way you just see his speed, the way he cuts, it kind of glides, right, the balance.
He can do things that like maybe a dozen people on the planet can do at the running back position.
And I think Deuce McAllister brought this up yesterday. Great point, too. Better it happens now, this, you know, strife with a contract, than something in August gets brought up and, you know.
Yeah, you have time now. Right.
Exactly. And, you know, week one is a long ways away. Hopefully this all gets settled. And when it's time to kick off in the Superdome against the Carolina Panthers, Alvin is there in uniform and taking advantage of that Carolina D.
I agree.
When we get back from the break, we'll hear from Derek Carr going into our Saints soundbank right after the break here on WWL.
This show is sponsored by Midi Health. There are great things that come with age, wisdom, experience, and knowledge, just to name a few. But if you're a woman over 40, it can also bring some less desirable things like hot flashes, insomnia, brain fog, moodiness, and weight gain, all symptoms of menopause and perimenopause. Yes, hormonal transition is a fact of life, but that doesn't mean you have to accept its symptoms as just another part of aging. Midi clinicians are menopause experts, equipped to support you with safe, effective, FDA-approved medications, as well as supplements, lifestyle coaching, and preventative health guidance. You'll come out of the experience feeling heard and with a plan to start feeling better. Midi offers accessible care. All their services are covered by insurance, and they're conveniently accessible through telehealth visits and 24/7 messaging. You deserve to feel great. Book your virtual visit today at joinmidi.com. That's joinmidi.com.
All right, back into Sports Talk. Been promising our Saints sound bank. We got head coach Dennis Allen, running back Kendra Miller. Why do I keep blanking on that name? I don't know what it is. At least I remember he's from TCU, I guess. Also in quarterback Derek Carr. Here's what Carr had to say after the final day of minicamp as the Black and Gold now get ready for training camp at the end of July.
How would you assess where you're at in terms of learning this offense and where you're at this point?
Well, there's still room. It's just OTAs and minicamp, so there's always room to get better. You know, I got a checklist of things that I still want to fine-tune before training camp, but I feel very comfortable with where I'm at, but that's the problem. You never want to feel comfortable, so I'm going to keep pushing myself and keep grinding. You know, I've had a lot of experience at learning new offenses and just going through that process of, you know, the time it takes, when it starts to make sense, all those kind of things. So I feel like I'm in a good place, but I got to make sure I stay in a good place. And so just making sure I stay on it. And it was a lot of extra time, you know, just spent with, you know, a coach when we were allowed, or, you know, talking with, you know, a player that's been in the system, asking them questions, all that. So it was a lot of hard work, and I'll definitely take the weekend to get some sleep.
Derek, we heard you last year say, you know, you thought some of the play action stuff at the end of the year helped you kind of play better toward the end of the year. We've seen a lot of play action stuff in camp and OTAs. What is it about play action that you find comfortable, and then what makes the play successful? Is it completely dependent on the run, or is there something that you can do to make it successful as well?
Yeah, every play, all 11 matter, you know, and so, you know, I have to be able to make a good fake. You know, it has to look the same when I go to hand it to the running back, and same thing when I, you know, run a play action or a bootleg. It's got to all look the same, and so I think that's the thing about this offense that has just, you know, it's given, you know, team's problems for so many years, is the run, the play action, the stems, everything looks the same for the first 2 seconds, you know. And so it helps create better pockets. It helps the offensive line. Sometimes it's hard in this league to just pass set a Khalil Mack or pass set, you know, those kind of guys, you know, over and over again, right? And so if you can do both and you can have success in the run game, I think then the play action, everyone doing their part, it matters too. You know, you know, the double team has to look the same in a run as it does in the play action. You know, if one's higher than the other, a good linebacker is going to see that quicker. And so all of those little details matter, but they've done a great job of their urgency and their intensity in which they coach it. You know, they demand from us, you know, perfection, and we do our best to, you know, make it look that way, run or pass. And so I think that's, you know, been a positive for us this camp.
Hey, Derek, the line looks a little different than it did last year. What are your early impressions of the guys up front?
I think the coolest thing about our offensive line, I think they've had a wonderful camp and OTAs and offseason. I really do. But I think the coolest thing I've seen, that unit just come together like they are a walking herd down the hallway wherever they go. And I think that's really cool. I think that unity, that bond, that cohesiveness, that togetherness, I thought they were close last year, but this is just another level that they've taken it to with Eric's leadership and, you know, seizing those guys. I mean, I just – you know, they've just, everyone's bought in, you know, you feel, you just feel this, and not anyone wasn't, it's just, you know what I'm saying, it's just different, you know, you can just feel a different stampede coming down the hall when we were about to start our offensive meeting, and you hear Eric yell, you know, 30 seconds later, every offensive lineman's going to walk in the door, and that's a cool thing to see. And so, as a quarterback, I mean, those are your best friends. And so, you know, whenever you see that group growing together, and then as they're growing tighter together, and then they start doing some things on the field, you're like, oh, wow. You know, that's just a positive sign. And so I think they took to heart a lot of stuff from last year and things like that, and they got a lot of toughness and mental makeup about them. And I've just been really impressed with just watching. On the field stuff's been awesome, but off the field, just that has been the coolest part to me.
I know there are real tests for, you know, how this offense will look, really happens when the bats come on, but how do you think the entire unit as a whole has really progressed in the offense from a mental standpoint?
Yeah, I think we've come a long way, and they threw, you know, Clint threw everything at us. You know, Clint and the staff, they made it really, really difficult on our guys. And, you know, for some guys, this is the first time they've had to be in the NFL and learn a new system. And so I've been at where they slow easy into it. I've been at where they throw everything at you, and, you know, you see who can kind of catch up and who can make it and that kind of stuff, and it kind of weeds itself out. Here, they threw everything at us, and our guys worked so hard mentally. I just saw players, like, grabbing each other all the time, like, and just having extra meeting time and, like, doing the stuff it takes to win, you know. And I saw our guys doing that. And when you see that happening, and then you see the results happening in practice against an amazing defense, you know, that to me just bodes confidence for our guys that we're on the right track. And so I think, like I said earlier, I think we're in a good place, but, you know, never want to be comfortable. You know, hopefully, you know, we just keep the gas pedal down, spend some time with family, obviously get your mind off football. All of our minds are melted right now after a mini camp, but, you know, give it a couple days, get right back into it, and keep the gas pedal down, because, you know, I think we're in a good place, but I think that we can just keep getting better. That's for sure.
That was quarterback Derek Carr there talking about getting acclimated into Clint Kubiak's system. And so far, obviously, very early gone in the goings from voluntary workouts to the mandatory sessions, Derek Carr's looked pretty solid out there, and don't want to try to inflate or over-exaggerate things, obviously, this time of year, but yeah, looking good in a new scheme, and I know a lot more will be told come training camp, but have to be positive overall with how he's looked and the chemistry he's been even developing with Chris Olave.
Yeah, he's looked in control, right? Like, he's looked, you know, it's funny, we talk about Spencer Rattler, Jake Haener as the backup quarterback competition, right? And I've had people say, well, why are you talking about them exclusively in the backup quarterback competition? It's not because, like, if they were playing immeasurably better than Derek, you would say, oh, they don't have a chance. It's that Derek looks like the starting quarterback and they look like a backup quarterback. Like, Derek's performance is that of someone who is in control, an 11-year veteran, and these other guys are just like, okay, I think they could be a backup, right? And, you know, we saw this last year to an extent, but I just think that there's a level of confidence that goes with everyone being on the same page. And that's what you have right now. Like, you last year, you brought in Derek and said, hey, we think you can run Drew Brees' system. And, you know, there was reason to think that. You had Pete Carmichael, and that's what the offense was going to be. And he has the ability to run that. But it was never a system that was designed for his strengths. It was a system where you're like, okay, we've done this well for so long that you should be able to do it too. And it didn't work. I mean, that's the fact of the matter. Like, you had nice moments, you had nice games, but it didn't work. And so I think we've seen this year is, like, with everyone on the same page, with everyone learning at the same pace, everyone looks a little more comfortable. And I think that's true of Derek. It's true of Chris Olave. It's true of Rashid Shaheed. It should be true of Alvin. We just haven't seen enough of him. And, yeah, so I think there's reason to feel good about what you've seen so far with Derek and everybody else.
You mentioned Alvin Kamara right there. Someone that should get some extended looks if he does end up missing some training camp time is Kendra Miller. Obviously, last year's rookie, had a up and down season, dealt with some injuries, talks about working his way back from that, also getting acclimated into this new offensive scheme. Much shorter clip right here. Here's running back Kendra Miller after yesterday's OTA mini camp session. Sorry.
What's the cool things that you've liked about this Kubiak system? Man, the vertical run offense, you know, I love it. And then, you know, how they use us in the passing game, you know, it's a big difference. So, you know, I feel like we're way more versatile now.
Does it feel like it kind of suits your skill set and kind of, you know, you can get upfield, kind of use that? Does it feel like it does benefit what you do well?
Yes, most definitely. You know, just stretching the defense and, you know, one cut and, you know, there it is.
Do you feel like the injuries are a thing of the past? You know, how hard is that for you a year ago?
Man, it was crazy because, you know, I've never had, you know, surgery in my life until, you know, that past year. So, you know, hopefully that was just a little rust belt, just a little bump in my life, and, you know, hopefully I can get back on track.
Were you running with any less abandon, or were you just... Like you're not afraid to
die. Oh yeah, nah. I feel like, you know, I'm confident in my mind, not really thinking of the injuries, and just ready to step forward.
I'm gonna ask you, when was that first time that you went like, I'm not thinking about that leg, that knee?
The knee, it took a little minute, but you know, once knee injuries are different, but you know, ankles are too. But you know, after just working in the offseason, I kind of just got over it. You know, you just kind of forget about it when you work out every day.
Kendra Miller there in the Saints locker room after the mandatory minicamp, the final day of minicamp, and anxious to see obviously what he can do in his sophomore season, rookie year. Like I mentioned before going into the clip, really up and down, a lot more down, unfortunately, because of injuries. But there were those little flashes. And I thought especially him as a receiver, which was really impressive because he wasn't really asked to do that at TCU at all.
Yeah, when he was able to get on the field, he was good, right? Like when he was able to participate, there was quality moments there, particularly week 18. He had a couple nice plays. I think he had a long catch against the Patriots. He had another one against the Bears that play got hurt on. But he just hasn't been available, so we'll see.
Going to take a break. When we get back from that, we will dip into the offensive coordinator everybody's been talking about, Clem Kubiak, right here on WWL Sports Talk. Want to tell you all, we'll bring Sports Talk to you on Monday live on location from Nicholls State University in Thibodaux from the Louisiana Line Camp. We'll be on the 50-yard line for an amazing offensive and defensive line camp with the best D-line coach in the country and Pete Jenkins. Also, Pro Football Hall of Fame center Kevin Mawai. Then also on Friday, June 28th, we'll join the first family of NFL football for the Manning Passing Academy with Archie, Eli, Cooper. Keep it all locked right here on WWL. A couple of great shows coming up soon, brought to you by the Thibodaux Regional Sports Medicine Center here on Sports Powerhouse, WWL 105.3 FM, the Big 870 AM, WWL.com, and of course, live on the free Odyssey app. We continue to dive into our Saints sound bank, this time hearing from offensive coordinator, the new guy in town, Clint Kubiak, as minicamp wrapped up on Airline Drive.
Coach, I talked to Fuad yesterday. He said it's helping him acclimate to New Orleans because the playbook is very similar to Oregon State is here. You kind of lay it out and how that is helping him?
Yeah, I'd say that sticks out in his film, you know, some of the similar concepts and schemes, but I think it's more of a compliment just to his intelligence as a person. He works hard at it. He's smart. He was well coached at Oregon State.
Where have you guys crossed gates? How much have you developed in the last month from a business standpoint? How much do you say that's really happened?
Yeah, I think I've seen improvement, you know, in the competitive periods when, you know, the ones go out there and they, you know, move the ball down the field. That's a good start. But again, there is no pass rush, really. We're all in underwear out here. So we get to training camp, we put pads on. You know, guys that maybe you didn't notice here the last couple of weeks, they're going to start showing up and the other way around, too. So, you know, that's what we tell our guys is it's real football come the fall. So they got to put themselves in position to be successful and be in shape. Over this break.
Clint, how would you gauge the that jump from when Derek first kind of got, you know, learning that offense to where he's at this point? Where's that, I guess, how would you gauge that?
He's been impressive with, you know, and I knew that coming here. That was a big reason to come here, right, to be able to coach him and to coach a guy who's played a lot of football and, you know, been to Pro Bowls and obviously a very intelligent player. So no surprise that he's been able to handle it well. He's done a good job. He's exceeded expectations, but, you know, like I said with everybody else, he's also has a growth mindset and is not satisfied. So we have a lot of work to do come the fall.
What kind of progress have you seen from Trevor Penning, and what are some of the things you want to see him really work on before training camp?
I think Trevor Penning has done everything we've asked him since we got here. Really tough mentality. I like the person. I like the way he works. I like how important the game is to him. And, you know, he's no different than anybody else. You know, we're going to coach him hard and expect a lot out of him. And you know, we'll see what happens when we put the pads on.
And the last time we talked to you was in the rookie camp, so we hadn't seen Taysom Hill do anything yet. You said you were going to try a number of things and see what works. I mean, I think we've seen you try everything with Taysom Hill. I mean, is that the idea? Is you just want to look at him everywhere, or he could really have a huge role in the club?
Yeah, well, he's obviously a highly intelligent player that's been coached extremely well, so there's a lot of carryover in his knowledge. And then his effort and his attention to detail was excellent this whole offseason. So, you know, I appreciate the work that he put into it. And I appreciate, you know, our coaches, our coaching staff's creativity and trying to get him out of a lot of spots. But, you know, he's no different than other. There's, you know, our receivers that have played three different positions. So, you know, so there's guys like Cedric Wilson. That's a really, really intelligent guy that's played a lot of spots too. Maybe doesn't get as much of the credit, but I would compliment him as well, you know, as well as our, you know, our offensive linemen that are playing center and guard. So, you know, but yeah, Taysom's done a great job this offseason.
That was offensive coordinator Clint Kubiak there talking on the final day of mandatory minicamp. And you heard him finish off there talking about Taysom Hill, and definitely excited for seeing more of what the Swiss Army knife can do in this team. Obviously, all the offensive roles and combined with the special teams. I thought it was interesting. We saw that one day them practicing the new kickoff rules and, you know, Taysom getting the kickoff and trying to throw it across the field and lateral it to the other side, just coming up with all kinds of, you know, interesting facets to this that with the kickoff, the new kickoff rules, it's just going to be really interesting to see. I thought it was really odd just waiting for everybody to get in motion because you have to wait for someone to touch the ball.
Yeah.
And then things can get going.
Yeah, and watching Darren Rizzi kind of coach that up has been really interesting because he's...
Hit it!
Well, so he... one of the things that I didn't realize is... And there, I don't know if everyone's doing this or if it's just a Saints thing. You have two returners back, and the guy on the right is the one that they want to make the call. And, you know, I think it was Jamal Williams who kind of just went in. He was on the left, but it was toward him. And he just went and caught it because he was like, yeah, it's toward me. But he used some words I can't repeat. But he was like, the guy on the right makes the call. And it was just funny because it's like, yeah, you got to drill that in because you screw that up. And someone, you know, it's like if you're the center fielder coming in, you're calling it. Like the outfielder calls it. There's a reason there's rules so that when there is something in the middle and you're not sure, you have that drilled in. But it's just something that these guys have never done. So it's kind of fresh. We also saw a combination return where I think it was Jermaine Jackson, somebody else, and the guy on the right caught it, and then he kind of just flipped it over to Jermaine as he came across. So I don't know. There's a lot of creative ways that this is going to be handled. I also think it's interesting. Like, so if you have Rashid Shaheed on the left and anyone else on the right,
you know where it's
you're
going
to want to kick it to that guy. But I have a feeling that one of the products of this kickoff is going to be a lot more kickoffs out of bounds. Because teams are going to start asking their kickers, okay, we want that guy to take it. But how do you ensure that guy gets it? You kind of have to kick it to his outside shoulder. If you kick it on the inside, then he could just say, hey, you run over here and I'll block, right? So you're going to see kickers trying to put it outside of the returner on the edge of the field, and they're not going to do it perfectly. So I think you're just going to see a lot more kickoffs out of bounds than we have in the past. And it's going to be because teams are trying to get fancy instead of just kicking it downfield. And I think probably by week six, a lot of these teams will be like, you know what? Not worth it. Kick it as far as you can.
Heading out to break. Well, one thing real quick, though, Jeff, for you, when you look at what we've seen so far with this Clint Kubiak offense, what has stood out the most to you? Has it really been the motion?
Oh, man, it's the motion. Yeah, every play. It's almost tiring. You almost get bored of it. But, yeah, that's going to be, you know.
Which is so radically different from what we've
when
seen.
When Saints fans watch this offense for the first time, you're just going to be like, wow, everyone's moving. Why is everyone moving? I don't get it. You know, and you're going to – the interesting thing is going to be if you have a ton of like we talked about this on the podcast this morning is – you
inside
know,
black and
one good way to get Dennis Allen very angry very fast is going to be all these motions and procedural penalties because you screw them up, right? So that's why we're seeing so much of it so early because you got to get it. It's got to be like, you know, you're not thinking about it. You're just doing it. It's a reflex.
Getting ready for the weekend. Taking a break. We'll be right back to close out Sports Talk after this here on WWL. Winding down things here on our Friday edition of Sports Talk. Heading into Saturday, gentlemen. And mentioned that Mike and I will be at the Louisiana Line Camp on Monday, broadcasting from there from 4 to 8. I'll be bringing my little one down there tomorrow. 14 years old, participating for the first time, been involved with the Rummel football program, and it was highly recommended for all of the guys on the football team to partake in this camp. So really excited for him. It's going to be Saturday, Sunday, Monday, coming home Tuesday. Lots of football in store for the little guy in the heat. Hopefully he can survive that.
What position?
On the long offensive line, mostly been playing guard.
Yeah, he got the short arms, huh?
Exactly.
Yeah, he's built
like his dad.
Yeah, I could see that.
Looking at our Oakland Heart Jewelers talk and text line, guys, it says, does it matter in contract negotiations if a running back has more tread on the tire due to suspension and injury?
I don't know about suspension and injury, but no, a guy like Michael Turner comes to mind. If you remember, he backed up with Danian Tomlinson for forever, and he ended up going to the Falcons, and that was the reason. He'd been in the league for a while, but he didn't have a ton of wear and tear. With Alvin, you know, the usage-wise, it's not really in his favor. You look at Christian McCaffrey. So Alvin has actually played 10 more career games than Christian McCaffrey. You know, they've been in the league. They've both been in the league since 2017. Christian has had fewer injuries that ended his seasons. But, you know, what Alvin does that I think has kept him spry is he doesn't take hits. One of his best skills is, like, when's the last time you saw him take, like, a direct hit from anybody? And you can, some people complain, oh, he doesn't fight for the first down. That's what lengthens your career. And, I think for a 29-year-old running back, he does have a much better case than than a Derrick Henry, right? Just because he doesn't take that
pounding.
He wasn't
that battering ram, right.
That a lot of people have done. So I do think that's going to help him in this.
Well, appreciate everyone for tuning in. Also, the latest episode of Inside Black and Gold dropping soon. We recorded today.
It's dropped.
It has dropped. It is out and ready to go. So check that out.
You need another hour of this.
There you go. We'll be back with more sports talk on Monday. Thanks for tuning in, everyone. Have a great weekend. Who dat?
Who dat?
Want to tell you all, we'll bring sports talk to you on Monday live on location from Nicholls State University in Thibodaux from the Louisiana Line Cap. Line camp, we'll be on the 50-yard line for an amazing offensive and defensive line camp with the best D-line coach in the country and Pete Jenkins. Also, Pro Football Hall of Fame center Kevin Mawai. Then also on Friday, June 28th, we'll join the first family of NFL football for the Manning Passing Academy with Archie, Eli, Cooper. Keep it all locked right here on WWL. A couple of great shows coming up soon, brought to you by the Thibodaux Regional Sports Medicine Center here on Sports Powerhouse, WWL 105.3 FM, the Big 870 AM, WWL.com, and of course, live on the free Odyssey app. We continue to dive into our Saints sound bank, this time hearing from offensive coordinator, the new guy in town, Clint Kubiak, as minicamp wrapped up on Airline Drive.
Coach, I talked to Fuad yesterday. He said it's helping him acclimate to New Orleans because the playbook is very similar to Oregon State is here. You kind of lay it out and how that is helping him?
Yeah, I'd say that sticks out in his film, you know, some of the similar concepts and schemes, but I think it's more of a compliment just to his intelligence as a person. He works hard at it. He's smart. He was well coached at Oregon State.
Where have you guys crossed gates? How much have you developed in the last month from a business standpoint? How much do you say that's really happened?
Yeah, I think I've seen improvement, you know, in the competitive periods when, you know, the ones go out there and they, you know, move the ball down the field. That's a good start. But again, there is no pass rush, really. We're all in underwear out here. So we get to training camp, we put pads on. You know, guys that maybe you didn't notice here the last couple of weeks, they're going to start showing up, and the other way around too. So, you know, that's what we tell our guys is it's real football come the fall. So they got to put themselves in position to be successful and be in shape. Over this break.
Clint, how would you gauge the that jump from when Derek first kind of got, you know, learning that offense to where he's at this point? How would you gauge that?
He's been impressive with, you know, and I knew that coming here. That was a big reason to come here, right, to be able to coach him and to coach a guy who's played a lot of football and, you know, been to Pro Bowls and obviously a very intelligent player. So no surprise that he's been able to handle it well. He's done a good job. He's exceeded expectations, but, you know, like I said with everybody else, he's also has a growth mindset and is not satisfied. So we have a lot of work to do come the fall.
What kind of progress have you seen from Trevor Penning, and what are some of the things you want to see him really work on before training camp?
I think Trevor Penning has done everything we've asked him since we got here. Really tough mentality. I like the person. I like the way he works. I like how important the game is to him. And, you know, he's no different than anybody else. You know, we're going to coach him hard and expect a lot out of him. And, you know, we'll see what happens when we put the pads on.
And the last time we talked to you was in the rookie camp, so we hadn't seen Taysom Hill do anything yet. You said you were going to try a number of things and see what works. I mean, I think we've seen you try everything with Taysom Hill. I mean, is that the idea? Is
you just want to look at him everywhere, or he could really have a huge role in himself?
Yeah, well, he's obviously a highly intelligent player that's been coached extremely well, so there's a lot of carryover in his knowledge. And then his effort and his attention to detail was excellent this whole offseason. So, you know, I appreciate the work that he put into it, and I appreciate, you know, our coaching staff's creativity and trying to get him at a lot of spots. But, you know, he's no different than other. There's, you know, our receivers that have played three different positions. So, you know, so there's guys like Cedric Wilson. That's a really, really intelligent guy that's played a lot of spots too. Maybe doesn't get as much of the credit, but I would compliment him as well, you know, as well as our, you know, our offensive linemen that are playing center and guard. So, you know, but yeah, Taysom's done a great job this offseason.
That was offensive coordinator Clint Kubiak there talking on the final day of mandatory minicamp. And you heard him finish off there talking about Taysom Hill, and definitely excited for seeing more of what the Swiss Army knife can do in this team. Obviously, all the offensive roles and combined with the special teams. I thought it was interesting. We saw that one day them practicing the new kickoff rules and, you know, Taysom getting the kickoff and trying to throw it across the field and lateral it to the other side, just coming up with all kinds of, you know, interesting facets to this that with the new kickoff rules, it's just going to be really interesting to see. I thought it was really odd just waiting for everybody to get in motion because you have to wait for someone to touch the ball.
Yeah.
And then things can get going.
Yeah. And watching Darren Rizzi kind of coach that up has been really interesting because he
hit it.
Well, so he, one of the things that I didn't realize is, and there, I don't know if everyone's doing this or if it's just a Saints thing. You have two returners back, and the guy on the right is the one that they want to make the call. And, you know, I think it was Jamal Williams who kind of just went in. He was on the left, but it was toward him. And he just went and caught it because it was like, yeah, it's toward me. But he used some words I can't repeat. But he was like, the guy on the right makes the call. And it was just funny because it's like, yeah, you got to drill that in because you screw that up. And someone, you know, it's like if you're the center fielder coming in, you're calling it. Like the outfielder calls it. There's a reason there's rules so that when there is something in the middle and you're not sure, you have that drilled in. But it's just something that these guys have never done. So it's kind of fresh. We also saw a combination return where I think it was Jermaine Jackson, somebody else, and the guy on the right caught it, and then he kind of just flipped it over to Jermaine as he came across. So I don't know. There's a lot of creative ways that this is going to be handled. I also think it's interesting. Like, so if you have Rashid Shaheed on the left and anyone else on the right,
you know where it's
you're
going
to want to kick it to that guy. But I have a feeling that one of the products of this kickoff is going to be a lot more kickoffs out of bounds. Because teams are going to start asking their kickers, okay, we want that guy to take it. But how do you ensure that guy gets it? You kind of have to kick it to his outside shoulder. If you kick it on the inside, then he could just say, hey, you run over here and I'll block, right? So you're going to see kickers trying to put it outside of the returner on the edge of the field, and they're not going to do it perfectly. So I think you're just going to see a lot more kickoffs out of bounds than we have in the past. And it's going to be because teams are trying to get fancy instead of just kicking it downfield. And I think probably by week six, a lot of these teams will be like, you know what? Not worth it. Kick it as far as you can.
Heading out to break. Well, one thing real quick, though, Jeff, for you, when you look at what we've seen so far with this Clint Kubiak offense, what has stood out the most to you? Has it really been the motion?
Oh, man, it's the motion. Yeah, every play. It's almost tiring. You almost get bored of it. But, yeah, that's going to be, you know.
Which is so radically different from what we've
when
seen.
When Saints fans watch this offense for the first time, you're just going to be like, wow, everyone's moving. Why is everyone moving? I don't get it. You know, and you're going to – the interesting thing is going to be if you have a ton of pursuit – like we talked about this on the podcast this morning is – you know, one good way to get Dennis Allen very angry very fast is going to be all these motions and procedural penalties because you screw them up, right? So that's why we're seeing so much of it so early because you got to get it. It's got to be like, you know, you're not thinking about it. You're just doing it. It's a reflex.
Getting ready for the weekend, taking a break. We'll be right back to close out Sports Talk after this here on WWL. Winding down things here on our Friday edition of Sports Talk, heading into Saturday, gentlemen. And mentioned that Mike and I will be at the Louisiana Line Camp on Monday, broadcasting from there from 4 to 8. I'll be bringing my little one down there tomorrow. 14 years old, participating for the first time. Been involved with the Rummel football program, and it was highly recommended for all of the guys on the football team to partake in this camp. So really excited for him. It's going to be Saturday, Sunday, Monday, coming home Tuesday. Lots of football in store for the little guy in the heat. Hopefully he can survive that.
What position?
On the long offensive line, mostly been playing guard.
Yeah, he got the short arms, huh?
Exactly. He's built like his dad.
Yeah, I could see that.
Looking at our Oakland Heart Jewelers talk and text line, guys, it says, does it matter in contract negotiations if a running back has more tread on the tire due to suspension and injury?
I don't know about suspension and injury, but no, a guy like Michael Turner comes to mind. If you remember, he backed up with Danian Tomlinson for forever, and he ended up going to the Falcons, and with, you know, like that was the reason. He'd been in the league for a while, but he didn't have a ton of wear and tear. With Alvin, you know, the usage-wise, it's not really in his favor. You look at Christian McCaffrey. So Alvin has actually played 10 more career games than Christian McCaffrey. You know, they've been in the league. They've both been in the league since 2017. Christian has had fewer injuries that ended his seasons. But, you know, what Alvin does that I think has kept him spry is he doesn't take hits. One of his best skills is, like, when's the last time you saw him take, like, a direct hit from anybody? And you can, some people complain, oh, he doesn't fight for the first down. That's what lengthens your career. And, I think for a 29-year-old running back, he does have a much better case than a lot of, like, than a Derrick Henry, right? Just because he doesn't take that
win, that battering ram, right?
That a lot of people have done. So I do think that's going to help him in this.
Well, appreciate everyone for tuning in. Also, the latest episode of Inside Black and Gold dropping soon. We recorded today.
It's dropped.
It has dropped. It is out and ready to go. So check that out. You
need another hour of this.
There you go. We'll be back with more sports talk on Monday. Thanks for tuning in, everyone. Have a great weekend. Who dat?
Who dat?